Mud Podcast presents.
Myself a web all through the night. Data streams the neon light. Tech mud pulls us into sight. Paranoia takes its flight. Government eyes, they see it all. Every click, each rise and fall. Selling us for data's call in this digital sprawl. The mud thick, but oh so clear. Where we roam, yet show no fear. Corporate hands, they steer the gear. In this tech mud, when we disappear. Space in the cloud, we lose our grace. Tech mud leaves a vivid place. Questions answered, voices loud in the heart of K-Mud's crowd. Public ways where truth survives. Corporate thieves can't take our lives. Cookies crumble, shadows cast. Every move, a deal that's fast. Selling secrets, trades unmasked. In this tech mud, it won't last.
All right, this is Tech Mud right here on K-Mud, where we talk about technology, the good, the bad, and perhaps the paranoid sometimes. And as always, we're here to try to answer your tech-related questions. I'm Garth, and I'm joined by Rick. Rick, how are you doing?
Good, Garth, and hello, everyone. Yeah, that cool new opening, and yeah, we're doing good. Except there's so much going on. You know, a month goes by and so many different things happen. I'm just glad
that we're not a political show, man, because there's so much stuff that goes on in the world.
Not even going down the political path. I mean, yeah, I that's know. Going on.
The tech path is quite busy this month or this last month. We are testing out some new theme songs. I'm going to kind of probably try a few of them until I settle on one that I particularly like. I'm just trying to find something that's not copyrighted. So that was made by AI. So
I thought you got some friends to do it at an event.
My friend, the AI. Yeah.
Wow, that was actually pretty decent for an AI.
It's getting better with vocals. You can really kind of delve down into it. I haven't paid money yet for it, so maybe if I paid them a little money, it would get better.
Yeah, well, actually, that was really good, and I suspect you feed it, you know, some initial stuff, so that makes it kind of exactly.
You have to tell sort of the theme of the music, or I want down tempo disco, or you know, whatever.
No, I think it's beautiful, and you know, it in fact it opens up the avenue, because you're right, copyright stuff is huge, and you know, if you're a little show like we are, no one's going to notice it. But you know, if all of a sudden you hit the big time, and then they it comes down on you once they
exactly. And it's Camwood's trying to get together, so, and I don't know where we're at with this right now, but they're trying to put some of the shows, especially talk shows, in more of like a podcast form so that they could send them out to listeners and you could give people links to the show. And yeah, part of that be. Part of the prep for that would be to get rid of any, like, you know, issues like copyrighted material and stuff.
Yeah, I would pitch dropping, you know, like when you give it the thing, you know, put in a pitch for people to donate and stuff, and that it's public access radio.
Yeah,
and,
for
you know,
sure.
Let the song, and then do that techie thing. You know, that's brilliant.
Right.
Hey, I there's so much going on. I want to jump into it because that, you know, it. Here's the thing that I want to bring up a couple of good, you know, like good news stories, but you know how I get. I'm gonna let it wander into the area, and I know you have a few. And
that sounds good. Let me just start with a couple of local stories, because I like to anything local that is like I've been part of or have witnessed. And then let's delve into the rest, which there is plenty of. And if you found some good news stories, then props to you, because almost all of mine are kind of depressing.
But, yeah, well, I got a couple. Yeah. You know what I mean? It and something. Anyway, go ahead. Let's start with the camera.
Well, I was dealing with a client during this last month where their camera system had been. Well, what it was is they noticed a lot of data usage because they were on a limited, you know, data plan. So they all of a sudden they were blowing through gigabytes and gigabytes and gigabytes. And a lot of people, if you're on like a high speed internet, like cable connection, you might not even notice this. You know, you could be uploading a ton of data. And that's what it was. When we started looking at it, we're like, wow, most of this data is all going out from the house. It's like, you know, it's not your teenagers watching a lot of video. This is sending data out into the internet. So turned out they had like a little Costco camera system of some sort. And they never changed the default passwords on it. So some bad actor got in there and was just sending whatever video they could and whatever else out to the internet. I mean, wow. we didn't dig any deeper than that, but you know, we unplugged the thing, but it's something to be aware of, you know?
And I think that is a big default. I know California pushed that default passwords have to be unique now. And, you know,
yeah, that's probably a good
thing. You know,
when
you, yeah, you know, and you can look on the bottom of the camera and then you get it and put it in. But, you know, there's a lot of stuff like that we do. Anyway, that it happens, and it's not just cameras, you know, because the camera, at least it has a video, but, you know, it's those IoT, Internet of Thing devices, lights and other stuff. We're just happy
lights,
to see them turn on and off by Alexa, you know. And
yeah, no, exactly. It's, I have noticed that by default, if it has a default password, most newer devices are now kind of prompting you like, hey, you have to change this or, you know, do something. Which is good. And then the other thing was, it's just there's so many people are getting tricked by these ads that are allowed to be sold on Google and on Facebook and probably some other places. But it's like you search for something, and I think I've kind of talked about this before. You search for a company like Canon or Epson printer, and the very first result is a paid ad, especially in Google. You click it, and it takes you to one of those sites that starts popping up stuff. It's either a site that's pretending to be the manufacturer and wants you to call them so they can collect your, you know, money or your information. Or sometimes it's a straight up like malware site that's popping up stuff and taking over your computer. And I'm like, how does this get past? Like, doesn't Google have some sort of like algorithm that checks what type of links people are putting in the ads that they allow in their service?
It's like the political system. The more money you pay, the slicker it gets through.
It's true. And to pay for a top tier ad that like comes up when you search for Epson, somebody's paying them quite a bit of money.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are not free ads. I mean, that if anything, Google is making money. And I think I don't know. I mean, this is scary because it seems like this is where I want government intervention to ensure that things like that are cropped. I mean, we got to stop this. Well, here, let me bring up a couple of one of my news stories here.
Yeah.
Samsung has developed a new EV battery, and it's basically a solid state battery. Now, it's going to be expensive. We probably won't see it in the market till probably 2027, but they've already sent it out to different companies to test. And this battery has some really cool features that might make EV a little more digestible to most of us, because right now it's not doing as well as it could. You know, Ford and all these companies are sitting on tons of trucks that they can't sell. But anyway, the battery is going to have something where it gets like a 600-mile range, and it can charge as quick as 9 minutes, 10 minutes.
That's got to be a totally new technology then, if it's charging
that fast. It's a solid state battery, and apparently, you know, it's pretty amazing. It hits like a 50 kilowatt or 500 kilowatt marker, you know, as far as how much energy it stores, which is,
supposed to be safer too than the other batteries are liquid, basically.
Yeah, the big problem with the non-solid state ones is if they get any kind of rupture to them or any kind of damage, then they can have a fire, where the solid state ones don't seem to have that issue. They just kind of short themselves out, but they don't turn into a
raging flaming inferno that you cannot put out.
What happened with that Tesla truck. That was crazy.
By the side of the freeway there.
yeah, that was amazing. You know, I mean, it was sad, you know, and that's a good news. We're seeing some new batteries coming up. That was probably my most uplifting story. Ford is trying to patent away. Ford's trying to patent away to have cars report speeding to the police, and they're trying to get a patent on it. So it's just, you know, we're going down this path of new technology. It's a little scary. And here's one that I found really interesting. This research company in Japan, in Tokyo, Japan, they came up with this AI that they were calling the AI scientist. And it was like a ChatGPT, except it was strictly for scientific stuff. And basically, they would feed it a problem and then tell it, okay, you've got this much time to come up with a solution, you know, to this problem, so that it wouldn't just linger on it forever. Well, Lord and behold, the AI system rewrote its own code to give itself more time instead of coming up with a solution. So,
nice. it changed the rules of the game on itself, huh?
It did, yeah. And it's not really self-aware, but it's just this idea that, you know, you give it the right constraints, like saying, okay, I want you to do this, and you got to do it within this window. And then all of a sudden it realizes it can't do it within that window. It gives itself more time.
Rewrites its own code. Yeah.
Yeah. It modified itself. So they had a couple of instances, you know, where instead of trying to make its code faster, it, you know, went around, and one of them was kind of weird. It just kept checking the time every, like, constantly, you know, updating the time. And another time it did it. It actually
got a little,
made it so
it got
that
a little
it had
nervous or neurotic about, like, yeah, you know, how much
yeah,
time
yeah,
it had
yeah.
left.
So anyway, that to me was, you know, the big ones. Now, I do have stuff that's leading down to what happened. You know, the show happened last month, and then 2 days later we had the CloudStrike, CrowdStrike.
CrowdStrike, yeah.
Yeah, and
which,
I want to talk a little, just
which
a little
caused
on that.
A whole cascade of things to, I mean,
oh my
what's
God.
The, I actually, not a whole lot of that I was working with personally, but it certainly affected a lot of companies and echoed throughout.
The airlines were brutalized by it, you know, and they were,
yeah.
Down. I mean,
and so they're a security company providing like kind of like AV to large corporations, like antivirus and like malware protection. And
right.
It almost sounds like maybe it came down to a employee or two pushing out a patch in a quicker way.
It was kind of a shame because, you know, the way they, yeah, I'm sure they changed their policy, you know, the CEO, they want them to step down. There was all kinds of lawsuits. But in this case, you know, which was a bad idea, they did the patch on Friday night, which unfortunately you know, the weekend is rolling up and you don't have, oh, you know, your force, your workforce, your IT force is going to be less. And the big catch 22 in this case is that it broke the systems such that you had to reboot them. And in some cases, if it was a virtual machine, it's like if you rebooted it like 15, 20 times, it would self-recover. But in most cases,
they had to go in
and remove the patch.
Yeah. And they actually had to, you know, start the machine in a special mode and copy or remove a file, which is hard to do. It's not like you can just, these patches are rolled out. There's not like a tech going to each of these companies. They're rolled out with like a click of a button. And it goes out to, you know, 5,000 computers, you know, across the U.S. But there's no, if you mess it up that badly, there is no undo button. You have to, like Microsoft, even though it wasn't a Microsoft caused problem, they were sending out engineers to a lot of companies to try to help them get back up and running.
Well, and it's a huge issue when you consider the fact that, you know, a lot of these companies, they have, you know, maybe 10,000 computers. I mean, not necessarily a person at each computer. So the concept of going to each machine or logging in to every virtual machine, and what made it really a problem is that the machines are now down. They're in the blue screen of death. And so they're not available. You have to go to the machine and reboot it into safe mode and go down the path. So this was a huge, huge burden. And I think it really opens up this question that we have to talk about, and maybe not on this show, it can be a show, but it's the idea, are we vulnerable? Because this was just a simple IT out. It wasn't even a malicious thing. I've got a list of malicious things that have happened in the last month.
And it's in order to do, well, a lot of companies, in order to have, you know, live protection, they grant a certain level, you know, or many things. They grant a certain level of access to a third party company that they trust. And, you know, that was one of them. But if somebody messes up or if that third party company gets hacked and then they get into your system, then, you know, that's what happens.
Well, there was already a case in China where someone got into the computer system of the prisons. And they were able to do a man in the middle when they were doing updates on software. So they were able to infiltrate the system because they were able to do this, you know, like redirect when they were getting updates on things. But I think the bigger question is, you know, everyone's talking about Bitcoin and digital currency and all this stuff. And you really got to stop and really evaluate this idea of trusting. You know, we've become so complacent that the internet always works. You know, that everything always works. And there's a lot of ways that it could go down, whether intentionally, you know, whether it's maliciously, whether it's, you know, due to national security, they want to pull the plug for a little while. I mean, it could have, I mean, it's already bad enough. Like, I know when we lose the power and, you know, like I remember in Redway, you lose the power, you can't get gas, you know, because their cash registers are down.
You have to have some level of backup on your real basic, you know, the things you use. And if you're dependent, I mean, I'm dependent on Google and Microsoft servers that are out there in the cloud. And it would definitely slow me down quite a bit to, you know, it would cause not a complete stoppage of work, but it would definitely hinder a lot of things.
Yeah. And so I think that, you know, I mean, even though, you know, in the case of this just shows that we're vulnerable. Now, that doesn't even go into the other vulnerabilities. And I've said this 100 times before, and I'll say it again, you know, the vendors that make software like Microsoft ought to be held accountable to their software not being so vulnerable so that you're not hiring third party companies to try to patch your inability to make something work right. I mean, it is,
and
like
I believe,
this whole saga. With Boeing.
Not that it was the software in this case. I mean, it was the patch that was rolled out.
Even though it is the third-party company who made the mistake, the fact that you need a third-party company because the product you're using, it's like driving a car that the tire, you know, that doesn't have reliable tires. So
to be the devil's advocate, I guess Microsoft might argue, well, so they make this, you know, to use your analogy, they make the car. but maybe it doesn't have the highest end security system, so you pay the third party company to install the better alarm, or you know.
Again, that's what we're talking about, is that we have this chain, you know, these things that are all interconnected. It creates a chain reaction.
I believe
reaction.
There is a lawsuit. There's probably multiple lawsuits, but the one know about was that Delta Airlines, who was the one that was most affected in terms of the airlines, because they had their like staff management and scheduling system affected by the outage as well. They were trying to sue for, you know, the time and money that they were out. So we'll see how that goes.
No, there are several lawsuits. And ironically, you know, Southwest Airlines avoided a lot of the issues because they still run Windows 3.1.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's a July 20th article on Slashdot.
That's hilarious.
But it is this kind of idea that, you know, and I read another article just because we've talked about this, and it's sort of interrelated. Someone took an XP machine, Windows XP, the old XP machine, and they put it on the internet. And within a couple of hours, not only had it been hacked with a rootkit and several other things, it had users, like all of a sudden had a new user with, you know, all these new privileges.
Oh,
so
yeah.
The level right now, I get about 2 weeks that I can run a machine connected to the internet 24/7 kind of thing. And after about 2 weeks, it starts bogging down because it's picked up all these things running in memory. And my solution is to reboot the computer.
Real quick, this is Tech Mud right here on KMud. Oh, we're talking about all sorts of technology. The phone number you can call in at about 7:30, which is coming right up, is 923-3911. I don't have that texting line set up today because I'm using my phone for other purposes here. But Rick, that's...
There's so much. And so let's talk about this other thing, because this one was, you know, it's huge. And Garth, I found a tool to help see if you've been, you know, if you're in this problem. And
so we're talking about, I mean, so you heard like what was it? Almost everybody in America plus a little had their social security number leaked. Yes. 2.7 billion records, each listing a person's full name, address, date of birth, social security number, phone number. So, I mean, pretty much like the whole deal.
Everybody.
Really?
Yeah. Everybody. So,
and I did. There is a tool you can look up. You can look up to see if you were part of that. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. It's called Pentester, PENTESTER.com. And it works really well. I found you on it. I found myself on it. I found my partner on it. You know, I mean, and actually every single person that I've thrown at it, I found them on it. Now, I have to say, I did notice two anomalies with it. One is, in the case of me, it seems to not have data pre-1994, maybe 96.
I noticed that too, because I looked myself up with that, and it was like a very old address. Yeah.
And I found that with others. But on the flip side, it is now, you know, the point that the site makes, it doesn't show you the social security number, but they're saying, hey, look, they show the last two digits.
And I, you know, honestly, my data has been leaked so much. I think this last couple of weeks, and I don't think it was even to do with this particular hack, but I think I got three letters in the mail, and you've probably got one of these at least before, where it says, hey, you know, your data has been leaked, and you know, we're offering you a year of credit protection from this service, XYZ. And, you know, and I tend to sign up for those because I'm like, well, free service. Okay, I'll take it. It shows you how much of it's floating around. And I years ago freeze my credit on three major bureaus, because it's actually pretty easy. They make it especially, I forget what was the God, what was it? Was wasn't it a credit protection bureau that got hacked or leaked a bunch of
it
information?
It was Equifax. Yeah, it was Equifax that got hacked.
So after that debacle, they allowed you to freeze your credit without any sort of fee. I would suggest doing it, honestly. It's relatively easy. I have had to unlock it before, And usually I just pick whatever the easiest one is to unlock, and that usually just works. That, and they're like, if I'm a car dealer, you know, if I need to have my credit actually, you know, what do they call that? A hard check on your credit.
Right.
Which can affect it as well.
Just so people know, I mean, this is what everyone, this is all you really can do, is you go to the three major credit card, or I mean, excuse me, credit reporting
credit bureaus, companies,
which is Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion, and you request your credit report. Now, in the past, I have mentioned to people, you get one free a year, and I like to break it up. So every 4 months, I go to one of the companies, and I just kind of rotate through. You know,
and these days, there's a lot of like, I think two of my credit card companies have like credit reporting things built in that they offer for free as well. So,
yeah, and there's that, but you can get the free report. Okay. I don't recommend companies like Credit Karma and others because they tend to just be a person in the middle gathering your data. You know, they're not giving, you know, you're getting a service for free, and it's like you're the product whenever.
Well,
it's free.
Yeah, that's, you are the product, especially with Credit Karma. That's correct.
Yeah. Right? So anyway, I don't recommend that.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is to do a freeze, like you just mentioned, on your credit. You know what I mean?
And that basically means if somebody is trying to, open an account or do something, they're going to run up against that freeze, and that account will not be allowed to be opened. With your address, social security number, phone number, and stuff, you know, chances are somebody could probably get fairly far with setting up an account.
Well, and here's the thing. It's not just opening an account. It's impersonating you to get into an existing account. Because, you know, right now I can go on the internet and I can use several different tools. And some of them, I'm not even going to mention them because it's sort of, I'm making it worse for people. But I can go. Like, I didn't know your birth date, so I used a different tool and I looked up your birth date. You know what I mean? And you know what I mean? And it cost me a penny. And if I'm willing to pay $20,
there's so much information out there. And if you want to, if you want to pay a few bucks more, and all these security numbers that were leaked, wasn't that a company that was involved with just that thing of collecting people's information and selling it?
Well, that's what really is a problem here. The company was called National Public Data. And, you know, it almost sounds like it's a, it's like the Fed, you know.
It's like National Public Radio, right? They must be pretty cool.
Yeah, they must be, like, good about it. And you don't have any choice. These people are gathering the data on you and then turning around and selling it. That's what they do. And so and here's an ironic thing to this story that is just kind of humorous, is that the company actually had published its own passwords in a file. Now, they've since deleted the file once Kaspersky Kerberos on security found it. But it was like they had their own passwords for the company
posted to an online area.
On one of their servers, and someone was able to find it and said, oh, by the way, we see the CEO's password. You know, so
maybe
it's
scary. Maybe when this happens, maybe like when somebody is like, you know, grossly negligent. I can't quite see that, Larry. Let's see. Our engineer is showing us deal reach and fee between California news outlets and Google, $250 million to support journalism. Oh.
Yeah, that's a new news article. Yeah.
But when some company is so grossly negligent that, you know, say they release almost everyone's social security number to the world, perhaps there should be some more consequences.
Well, I think this is where we have a big problem. There needs to be consequences, we need to be hardened from the top down. So, you know, Microsoft has built the name building all this software, but yet, you know, all of a sudden they have problems with their Copilot Studio, you know, exploit sleek, sensitive cloud data. You know what I mean? And they should be held accountable for that. You know, healthcare companies, you know, had like this giant breach. They should be accountable. And I think that where we're in this catch-22, because the bigger you are as a corporation, the more lobbyists you have, you know, taking senators and congressmen out to lavish dinners and calling it a party.
And it, and it seems like the consequences are usually, well, people sue them, like there's a class action lawsuit or something, and then they tend to settle that, and usually the lawyers get most of the money. But there's no real, they're not like breaking a law, or not that I can find that they're held accountable for.
We don't have a stringent enough. I mean, you know, if we were in the middle of a war, you know, then all of a sudden it would be like
this War Powers Act
security.
Or something.
Yeah. And we would, you know, make them crack down. But at this point, it's just gotten appalling to the level of which companies are not held accountable. And
I guess what has been passed, which I know about, is disclosure laws, where a company can't hide the fact that they have been hacked or have lost all this data. They have to disclose it in a timely manner now.
Okay, Toyota confirms that it had a data breach and it was leaked. You know, all your driving stuff was leaked out. Okay, great. So, you know,
we were just talking about that last month.
Yeah, but I mean, did they? Well, it was on the 20th. This article came out. But the point
I mean, we're talking about car companies selling your data. So, you know, yeah.
Well, no, and then there's GM, who, you know, Texas is suing for selling data, and you know, here's the part that gets me: the United States Post Office USPS. You know, it shares data with Meta and Likedin and Snap, you know, and, you know, it just doesn't stop, you know, I don't know what to say.
The brokerages,
you know,
keep going.
But there's all kinds of companies that are legally selling data, which should,
so
should be, if you're selling my data, I should know every time it makes a transaction.
KMUD is a community radio station in the Redwood region of Northern California. Donate to support people-powered radio at kmud.org.
Hey, the time is about 7:33 here at the MUD and beyond. You're listening to Tech Mud of Garth and Rick. Larry is our engineer. Thank you, Larry. And you can call in at 923-3911. We'd be happy to also answer your tech-related questions, or at least attempt to. Or you can chat with us as well.
Now, here's one that I thought was kind of funny. This is one of the, I guess, a good moment. But there was a data breach that exposes U.S. spyware maker behind Windows, Mac, and Android and Chrome malware. So there's this company in Minnesota. They had been hacked. And in the process of the hack, we now know who they have been spying on for third-party companies who pay them.
That's good. That's good.
I guess that's a good hack.
Sure, I'll take it. You know, we'll chalk that up under the good news stories.
Yeah, that's it. Well, if you were in court, there was a major court. Well, it wasn't though because of the CrowdStrike, but they had a outage as well, and it caused the court systems to go down. Anyway, I guess I'm just, you know, there's nowhere I can go with this, because the bottom line is we don't have any way. You and I, Garth, can't go sue Microsoft, no matter how much, you know, we say, oh, you guys didn't protect,
or sue Meta,
or whatever.
Yeah, you have to have, well, I mean, you can sue anybody at any time for anything, but you have to have money to pay the lawyers, and the bigger the person, the bigger the company or person is who has a whole team of lawyers on their side, you just drag stuff out for eons, years. Speaking of calling in, we do have a caller.
Yay.
Hey, caller, you're on the air.
Okay. Hi, you guys. Thanks so much for this show. I can understand, I'd say, about 50%, just because I'm not a tech person at all. But I was really concerned about, was it 3 weeks ago? I think I missed the first part of your show where the airports were down, airlines were down. It was the big major hack that happened. And what concerns me mostly is that people won't have access to their bank accounts. So if you could speak to that a little bit, just the lack, you know, you speak of vulnerability, and yeah, the data is huge, but not being able to access bank accounts when things go south like that seems to me a huge concern. Thank you for your answer.
Yeah, thank you for calling in, caller. Yeah, we were at that. That was what we were talking about here.
Except let's point out, it wasn't a hack. It was a mistake.
It was actually an anti-hacking company that pushed out a update to all the airline computers, or most of the airline computers, except for Southwest. He was running Windows 3.1 for safety reasons. It was a patch gone wrong, basically. A little patch.
And to clarify, it affected Microsoft systems. So that wasn't just airlines. That, you know, if you were a bank
all over the place
and you were using Microsoft, you were impacted. If you, you know, any company that was using the Microsoft product, who then had this third party, you know, that they pay for the service, like, you know, we pay for an antivirus. Well, they're a corporate version of it. And if you had that, then it brought the system down, which does talk to what we already mentioned is the vulnerability we have, you know.
And then to address the caller's question about banking and being denied access when stuff is crashing. I didn't actually read anything about that particular issue.
Well, again, anyone with corporate, you know, Microsoft, because it was, and we're running CrowdStrike.
Yeah.
Or CrowdStrike. So there may have been a bank out there.
I wonder how long, I should look that up and see, like, how long has any particular banking institution been offline where you can't transact with them? And that does get worrisome because it does set in, you know, you can't gain access to your funds, you can't pay your bills, and you know, you get a certain level of like panic.
ATMs not working. I mean, or I've heard that some banks weren't giving out their funds because their systems had shut down. So, but I don't understand exactly how that works. And I apologize for coming in late if you've already covered this.
To some degree, but not much. I mean, you're okay, caller. I think the big thing here is what we already covered, or what the nutshell of this part of that conversation is, it was Microsoft products, a third-party company put something out bad. It wasn't just the airline industry that was impacted. It was many, many companies across the board, people who were running Microsoft servers. Most notably, they were running it on a large scale. So they, you know, they don't have just a computer. They have like networks of computers that tie everything together. And that really did trickle across the industry. So there were bank transactions that didn't work. There were others. I mean, it really did have a large impact. And it's been recovered now, right? And we've moved on. But I don't know, Garth, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. It's something to be aware of. It's I don't think I myself have ever been in a situation where I couldn't get into my like funds or like something electronically, or at the worst case scenario, you know, you have to go down to the bank physically. But that is a very relevant concern. I mean, if you had a bad enough incident or hack, you could see a banking institution, you know, go offline for a period of time. And I guess the question is, what is their disaster plan there? I've certainly been to stores and stuff where I can't purchase something because, you know, the terminal is down or the credit card company is having issues.
I had a bank that, you know, my partner uses, and it was down for 2 weeks. And basically what happened was their official statement was, we noticed some unusual activity. So, in, you know, trying to be, you know, most critical about it, we're shutting things down. So all the ATMs broke down. You couldn't do online transactions. You could go to the bank and you could withdraw a maximum of $500 cash. And
yeah,
that was it.
See, that's concerning. I mean, that,
and it,
yeah,
was,
yeah,
and
that
it lasted 2 weeks. And then they fixed it, you know. But they never really proved who the hack was, or, how, you know, it wasn't this, the CrowdStrike thing. It was, you know, it was about a year.
It almost sounds like they were dealing with some sort of like a crypto thing or something, or like something that affected all their systems and they had to bring everything down, but didn't really want to tell people about it.
Right. But don't you guys feel like, you know so much about how this all works. I do not, but it's just my gut feeling says we're in a zone where anything could happen at any time and impact everyone on a massive scale, and no one could do a damn thing about it. So I'm back to my pillowcase. You know, I'm thinking, well, maybe it's time to start taking my money out of my bank. And I won't give you guys my address, but, you know, just keeping it around the house or whatever. Like seriously, what do we do as a people who have become so dependent on this technology that's so vulnerable?
I think everyone should have a contingency plan. You don't need to keep a ton of money under your mattress, but you do want to keep, just like you want to keep, you know, a couple weeks worth of food in the house. You might want to keep, you know, a few hundred dollars, maybe $1,000.
Well, around. a lot of our local like fire personnel and emergency services remind us to try to keep a go bag or something. And that could be part of it, is a certain amount of money, just as part of that. Because hopefully, I mean, yeah, the whole system could break down and we could be in, you know, zombie apocalypse times, but hopefully you could regain your access to that money, or you know, I hate to say it, but the federal government would step in or something if people really started panicking.
But I think Gart, this is the thing that the caller kind of makes light of, is that even though you and I know a lot about technology, it's not going to change a darn thing. You know, I'm not going to be able to fix
Can't hack my way back into the bank account.
Yeah. We're just dependent on the fact that, you know, I can't tell you how many times in Redway I remember power going out and you can't buy anything.
Yeah. It just seems that everything's moving so fast into this narrower and narrower gate of control. And I don't mean to, you know, suggest like any kind of conspiracy. At this point, I don't think a conspiracy is necessary when the technology is so vulnerable and so many people have everything they have in their banks or in their data. I guess I'm just a real Luddite, so I'm going to sign off and let you guys carry on. But thank you again for fielding the call and for your information.
Yeah, thanks for your call. 923-3911 is the number here at the MUD.
Let's talk about what was happening with the Waymo taxi cars. That was funny.
Waymo,
I watched the video.
Good old Waymo. I recently went down to the Bay Area a couple months ago or something, and those things, like on the San Francisco streets, they are driving everywhere. You see these driverless cars, and I'm sure the people that live there are just totally used to it. And I'm like, wow, that's some trippy stuff there. Is he like, you know? And they are a robo taxi company. People can take them in San Francisco.
Yeah, and, which is kind of cool, you know, and there's been a few incidences. They're not perfect, you know, especially in adverse conditions. They sometimes have trouble, and it's not just Waymo, it's all of them.
There was one that we talked about a few shows ago that shut down entirely because it ran somebody over and dragged them behind the car or something, you know, kind of the worst case scenario for a company like that.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, talk about the funny thing.
Well, so in order to, well, first of all, in order to serve SFO and get to the airport, Waymo is going to have to be allowed to, right now they're only on surface streets in San Francisco. They're going to be allowed to drive to the airport and stuff. And they say they're not going to drive during rush hour at first. And they're going to, you know, they're kind of doing it in a step-by-step process. But, I was looking up this video here. Apparently, there's this like apartment complex in San Francisco where, for some reason, all these driverless cars are coming in and they're trying to park in this parking lot, and they're honking at each other and like trying to park. There's like 30 of these Waymo cars, and I can only imagine what the people that live in the apartment complex. I mean, they're going crazy, probably.
Yeah, they've complained.
They've complained. quite a bit.
It's like 4 a.m, you know, 3 a.m. All of a sudden you hear honk, honk, honk. And
it's the robot cars.
Yeah, it's these robocars, and they're doing it. This is where they kind of store. This is where they sit until they're ready to go. And they're doing it because it's to when they go to park and they're either backing up or they're about to, you know, make a turn into a parking stall or whatever. They honk their horn to in case there's anyone standing there to let them know we're coming. Just like, you know, you hear the trucks with the beepers that back, you know, whenever they back up. It's so that you know the truck's about to back up. Unfortunately, you know, it's caused a great deal of discomfort for the people who live nearby, because it wouldn't be bad if it was a honk, but it's like a serenade.
If it's multiple cars. Well, so it's interesting. I mean, I would, at this point, I'd take a ride in one of those things. I'd be interested to see. I think we're
going to see driverless cars. That's just the way it is. And you know, maybe they might, you know, get enhanced where, you know, certain lanes are given just for them, you know, and eventually it'll be flying cars. And, you know, and they're, let's face it, at this point, if you and I were to get into something that, you know, becomes like a smart drone, it's not going to have a pilot. You know what I mean? It's going to be a smart, you know, knowing where it's going, and you just go for the ride.
Man, speaking of drones, this is kind of it's pretty much the same thing. It's there's a town, I forget where it is, maybe in Texas, that's allowing Amazon to test all the drone delivery stuff. So they're getting packages dropped off. But I was watching some video of that, of like the neighbors filming the drone dropping the package off. Those things are kind of loud. They're pretty big drones, and it sounds like a freaking swarm of bees from hell or something coming down at you. And then it drops the package off, and it's not super delicate either. It just drops a thing, and then the backdraft from the propellers blows the package around a little bit. So it's not exactly there's a reason why they're testing it, I guess, is
and
they're not ready for prime time.
Well, and it will get better, but you know, I don't see how it really, you know, unless I am using the app where I am tracking the package coming directly to me, it does seem like, you know, it's a bad idea. I mean, there was a day, and of course this dates me, where when UPS came to your door, they rang the bell and waited for you to grab the package from them.
You know, they didn't just drop it or throw it.
They didn't just leave it on your porch and run. You know what I mean? It's just like there was a day, you know, and because they want to do it more and more, and now all of a sudden you're talking a robot. You know, I guess if you hear the bees storming outside your window, you know your package is there.
Yeah, now
I think it's, you know, it is what it is. But I've got to say that, you know, we are, you know, eventually I've had things show up that were shipped to me that were wrong because someone screwed up their database. You know what I mean? Because you got a lot of companies sometimes involved with like, okay, this company gathers this stuff and the next one does that. And I don't know.
So you've had like other people's stuff shipped to you, or
with my address on it? It's like, it's my name, but a different address. And what I was able to kind of gather that looked like what happened is, and I'm sure you've had this happen in your life, where you're working with a spreadsheet and you make a entry or you delete a cell to make the line look right, but it shifts everything, you know, a bunch of data over, but you don't notice it. Right. Because, you know, you're not looking at that other address. So then all of a sudden you get shipments that are weird stuff that, you know, you're going like, I didn't order this, or, you know, or it comes to someone else. It's to my address, but it's not, you know, and it has my name.
I'm honestly surprised it doesn't happen more often. And I mean, as evil as some of these companies are, I'll give them props for like the logistics that Amazon and some of these other companies have built out are absolutely crazy. Like the speed at which they can process some of that stuff.
It is pretty amazing that we can track it. I still get mad at the USPS system. They have a service where you can sign up and it'll send you a photo of whatever is showing up in your mailbox, which I think is fantastic. But it doesn't do it on certain domestic, or I mean on international stuff. So if it's stuff that, you know, is being sent by, you know, it's a lot of times it's stuff like from Malaysia or China, some of it gets pictured, but most of it doesn't. So you don't, that was the reason why I even signed up, because, you know, we have those post office box things out in the street. So every once in a while, the carrier loads it in the wrong box, you know. And
oh, yeah. So you just want to know. Yeah.
So I want to know if it was delivered, you know.
I've had to use my security system at the shop to review a time frame where they said a package was delivered. And I'm like, there's not a mail truck in sight. There's no package during this 10-minute time frame you say that this package was dropped off. And usually whatever company I'm dealing with just goes, oh, okay, let's call it lost in the mail or whatever. But it's weird that things can say, oh, they were delivered. And all this time, they were handed to you. And I'm like, no, I don't think so.
Right. Well, I know I've got real frustrated with something kind of intertwined like that, where I had to report something happened wrong. And the only way I could get it where it was, you know, I got either my money back or got them to ship a new one, so I had to report that it was stolen from my porch, which wasn't the case. And I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was really frustrating because that was the only option I had. And I had to report it to that FBI thing, the BT, I forgot the initials now. It's like three letters, but it's where, you know, when you have a, you know, something stolen from your property, or like, you know, a fraudulent thing happened.
File a report, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. You got to file a report. And then I did, and I got, you know, whatever, I got credited. But if I remember right, I was like flustered because I was like, well, that's not what has happened. And I can't remember exactly what it was. It might have been the box had been opened or something. I don't know. Anyway, you know, we're dealing with a lot of stuff these days, and people need to have contingency plans would be my, you know, point. Is you know, you got to think about it. Don't get so complacent that you're so used to using your credit card that you don't have maybe a little bit of cash in case there's an outage. You know, don't think that, you know, always have a little bit of food, have a go bag, you know, just a handful of things.
I see Costco is selling gold and silver bars now. They must be getting in. And survival food too. Hey, what do you know? They must be really onto something here.
Yeah, that stuff's overpriced. And I looked into some of it. I was shocked, you know.
Yeah, no, I don't think that's probably your best deal going, actually. But it is interesting how every even disaster preparedness it becomes a, you know, of course it becomes a capitalistic industry.
So
but you're listening to Tech Mod here on KMod. We're kind of winding down. It's 7:53. So yeah, I got a few more minutes
to go. So you know, I have several Wi-Fi routers, and I like to reload the software on them so I have more control. But I know that, you know, there's a lot of companies that, you know, make these things. And one of the tasks that I tried to do, and I was, you know, I followed up in a forum, and the conversation went on, was trying to find a router made in the U.S.
Is there a company that's actually made?
No one successfully said this router is made in the U.S.
Yeah, no.
You know, there's all have some international.
Yeah, some international chips. And that might be a thing that's changing as we become more protectionist with our chips. But with that cheaper consumer stuff, it's, I mean, the U.S. lawmakers, I mean, they're turning their eye to China, of course, because, you know, we're in this kind of new Cold War. And they're looking at TP-Link because they're kind of the inexpensive router brand, which is actually, they've become pretty decent in terms of controllability and stuff. But they're looking at it and going, hey, all this stuff's from China. It's almost 100% Chinese product. You know, could this be part of the next cyber attack? Whereas, I don't know, I kind of look at it, I'm mainly looking at routers for their usability and what they do and how long they're supported. Like, is the company going to ditch out next year and not give me an update? Or can I download new, you know, the new updates for years to come?
Right, right. That's an important thing to consider. And, you know, anyone who has a router should consider getting an update for it if they haven't. Along with all your things connected to the internet, you should consider discarding it, perhaps, if you don't have it on a controlled
network.
I'm
telling you, most routers, I mean, at the like old, except for maybe some of these ASUS routers still get updates, even old ones. But for the most part, 5 years is kind of the lifespan before they stop getting supported, which is a pity because they still are kind of, they're still pretty usable for the right. average, you know, average needs.
Well, you can go down the, like, you know, you can, a lot of routers will,
third party.
You can find ones where you use OpenWork or you use,
Tomato.
You know, there's a couple of other ones, Tomato and a few others where you can download new firmware into your router and it changes the router drastically. And it doesn't work with every router, but it is an option. I like that option because it lets me. Yeah. Take something old and bring it back to life.
Yeah, you know, I like the idea of keeping it out of the e-waste. And actually that's a local story I could bring up real quick. The local dump here in Redway has actually been one of the only places to take e-waste for free. They've gone completely the other direction. And from what I'm told, I actually have to go chat with them and see like what the reality is on the ground. But I've had customers tell me that they're charging $25 per item. So like you got laptop, $25. You got like a computer tower, $25. TV, $25. So that's pretty
expensive. you're gonna have to sit on them because most every county has something where once a year they make an e-waste thing, you know, where you drop them off somewhere.
Yeah, there's usually an e-waste day and like a hazardous waste day for like paint and other things.
Yeah, but, which is, it's a drag, you know.
I'll follow up. I'll report back next month on that and see if we have information. I think actually Mendocino might have some free places and across the county line. Next month, speaking of, we'll be back on, it's the third Wednesday of the month, so it'll be September 18th is when we'll be
breaking the airwaves again. There's a fun drive happening around that time, I can't remember. Next month. So we'll see about it. Hey, another thing, we got a little more, is that a lot of people don't realize it, but you cannot blur your property on Google Maps if you don't want to show your property.
This has been a KMUD podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast and also on our website, kmud.org.